I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, March 27th, 2026. The time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. And committee members present today, Senator Rauscher, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Dunbar, Vice Chair Senator Wilikowski, Senator Klayman is online, and I am Senator Giesel, the chair. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and Chloe, who are keeping the minutes and helping us out with the audio. We have two items on today's agenda. First up will be Senate Bill 280, Oil and Gas Property Tax, Municipal Tax. And the second bill will be Senate Bill 269, Board of Fisheries. So on Senate Bill 280, we will stop at 4:40 p.m. to complete the meeting with Senate Bill 269. So first up is Senate Bill 280. This is the first hearing of the bill. We're going to begin with a presentation from the five mayors. We will have a detailed walkthrough of the bill on Monday. But today we're going to have testimony from the five mayors, and then we will hear a presentation from the Department of Revenue. So we have the five mayors online. I'm going to start with Chris Noel with the Denali Borough. Then we'll be going to Edna DeVries at the Mat-Su Borough, Josiah Pocketuck, North Slope Borough, Mr. Hopkins for the Fairbanks North Slope Borough, and lastly, former Senator Machicki from the Kenai Peninsula. So, Mr. Noel, thanks for calling in today. If you would give us your thoughts about Senate Bill 280. Oh, and pardon me, before you begin, Mr. Noel, pause for one moment. I want to welcome Senate President Gary Stevens to join us and Representative Donna Mears. Thanks for being here with us. Mr. Noel, welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Giesel and Vice Chair Wilikowski, members of the Senate Resources Committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, very well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Well, I first appreciate the opportunity to share some perspective on Senate Bill 280 in the Alaska Liquid Natural Gas Project at large. It would fundamentally alter the energy landscape in our state and be an economic boon for Alaska and could be for the Denali Borough. And all along, we've worked to understand the financial arrangements proposed by the developer and advocate for our needs. So as proposed, phase one of the project would include 87 miles of pipe and related components in the Denali Borough. It would be a $1.5 billion investment based on current estimates. This is four times the value of all taxable, real, and personal property for our full value determination in the borough based on last year's assessment. So two primary concerns with SB 280. The first, I believe shared with my fellow municipalities, is the co-opting of municipal taxing authority. We tie the hands of our future residents and in Denali lead to $1.5 billion in untaxable private property. We know that the project would lead to real benefits, but those would be limited in our borough with no existing gas distribution infrastructure and unclear plans for an offtake point during construction. The second concern relates to the assumption that state and local subsidies are required for the viability of this global energy project. I really believe we ought to take the time necessary to stress test this assumption. The Denali Borough, for those who don't know, doesn't currently have a property tax. We are the only ones along the pipeline route without property tax. And we have consistently supported the payment in lieu of taxes at a rate that is fair and reasonable. As written, at full production, the value of the alternative volumetric tax for the borough would be approximately $4 million annually. And this is equivalent to about a $3 million tax rate. 10 miles of the pipeline are planned to directly cross Denali Borough land, and we need clarity as to whether code-required land use fees are preempted by this bill. There will be real impact to all of our municipalities, and I think this is, you'll hear about this from my fellow mayors and during construction. And so impacts to roads, waste management, fire and EMS, healthcare, and housing, to name a few. The Denali Borough has three code-required land planning processes relevant to the project that we must administer, further increasing short-term demands on limited staff and resources. So bottom line is we cannot subsidize increased costs. We need certainty via an impact payment program during construction that actual costs will be covered by the project. In addition, as was identified by the previous Municipal Advisory Gas Board would recommend some portion of the impact payments be available to non-pipeline communities for the indirect or currently unknown impacts that will arise in municipalities that don't receive a direct property tax or alternative volumetric tax benefit. Just wanted to summarize, we've participated in regular meetings with municipal leaders, Glen Farne, Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, and representative of Governor Dunleavy's office, and look forward to ongoing discussions as we work together on a path forward. This global gas export project is of national importance, and it's too large for municipal taxpayers to subsidize. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you very much, Mayor Noel. You had some really important suggestions, so I appreciate that. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Noel, I was curious, you mentioned a little bit about costs to the borough during construction. I'm wondering what kind of costs you're anticipating.
Thank you, Senator Myers, for the question. You know, I anticipate some of those things that I talked about, so increased solid waste acceptance, potential for increased use of fire EMS services. We know those key land planning processes. We will need to work through those with the developer. So those are, and I don't know if I mentioned impacts to roads. Most of the impacts are going to be concentrated along the Parks Highway corridor. There are local roads. The Denali Borough does not have road service areas. We've just started to provide supplemental funding for road maintenance, road improvement, and foresee, you know, based on maps that have been provided, that there will be impacts from this large construction project.
Thank you. Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, thank you. Just two things to clarify. You mentioned at the very beginning the number $1.5 billion, and I'm just curious what that was. And then the second was, we've heard about potential for offtake there, and I guess how far along is that process for you and for the borough?
Yeah, Senator Kawasaki, thank you for the questions. I think the first question related to the $1.5 billion estimate, that's been provided through those meetings with Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation representatives from Glen Farne. So that's the most recent estimate I have seen. And I do believe that's based on an estimate from, say, about 10 years ago. Remind me, if you may, of the next question.
The next question was related to the offtake, because we've heard potential offtakes at, well, I don't know, I mean, definitely Fairbanks, but even near Clear Air Force Base and just as you approach the borough.
Yeah, I would say, you know, thanks for that question. And I'd say we would advocate for an offtake, at least one offtake in the borough, and understand that it's not without cost. And I'd say there's not been clarity about where that location would be. We have heard there might be a location in Cantwell. Obviously, it would probably, you know, need a market to go to. So near the park entrance would be another strong possibility in Healy. And then, yeah, near Clear Space Force Station would also be a natural fit.
Great. Thank you, Mayor.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Noel, my office has had a little bit of correspondence with the state assessor's office, and we were talking to them about the tax implications as far as the man camps for construction. What they relayed to us is that the pipe itself would not be taxable during construction, but that the man camps would be. Is that something that is a potential offset for you during the construction phase when you're going to see the most disruption?
Yeah, thanks, Senator Myers. Yes, I do think that, and based on maps that we have seen, some of those camps, those construction camps would fall on. I think the plan is to put those on borough lands. And kind of to my comment earlier, we want to understand if our existing land planning fees would be preempted by this bill. We would not want that, but that's, yeah, a potential for another revenue source for the borough during construction.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that answer. Thank you very much, Mayor Noel. I don't see further questions for you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Senator Klayman, I do have a question.
Oh, Senator Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor Noel, can you, in estimate, how much is the Denali Brook collecting in taxes today from total tax revenue?
Senator Klayman, thanks for the question. I would say total revenue is about $8 million. $7 million of that is tax revenue, primarily from a 7.5% tax on overnight accommodations. And then we have a 5% tax on the sale of alcohol and marijuana. That makes up about 10% of our total tax revenue. We also have a severance tax on the extraction of coal and gravel, which brings in about $50,000 each year.
So in the current
Senator
tax structure, and assuming, thank you, Madam Chair, I apologize for not asking permission. In the current tax structure, if the value of the gas pipeline is $1.5 billion, under the current tax structure with the Denali Borough, what kind of revenue would the Denali Borough be giving up if this bill became law and you weren't allowed to collect any tax from the gas pipeline under current structure? And assuming the $1.5 billion value.
Yeah, Chair Giesel and Senator Klayman, thank you. As written, you know, kind of under current law, as I understand it, the full 20 mils of state property tax would go to the state because the borough does not currently have a property tax on the books.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Klayman. And again, thank you, Mayor Noel, for spending time with us today. I'm moving now to Mayor Edna DeVries in the Mat-Su Borough. Mayor DeVries, welcome.
Thank you very much, and hello, everybody. I'm sorry I'm not able to be there in person and see all of your faces, but my prepared remarks are that this bill replaces the traditional property tax with an alternate tax based on natural gas profile and establishes a framework for payments in lieu of taxes or PIL. The legislation generally aligns with our borough assembly resolution, which deals with PIL, payments in lieu of taxes. The bill clearly supports the use of a PIL structure. This approach provides greater certainty for the project while ensuring municipalities, including ourselves, receive revenue in place of property taxes. This bill exempts the pipeline from the 2.65 mil calculation used for local education funding, and that's a very important aspect to us. Without this exemption, local governments, and especially the Mat-Su Borough, could experience reduced education funding due to the increase in value due to this project. The bill avoids that unintended consequence, and we're very thankful for that. Number three, full distribution to municipality. This bill allows the entire municipal portion of the PIL to municipalities rather than splitting it with the state. Number four, 10-year backstop. The bill states that the PIL will commence after 10 years, regardless of whether the throughput threshold has been met. This is an important provision as it prevents indefinite delay in local revenue. There is one key issue with the bill regarding the threshold in which the PIL is triggered. The bill establishes a PIL trigger at 1 billion cubic feet per day, whereas our assembly resolution identified 250 million cubic feet per day as the preferred threshold. We are open to discussion on this based on other municipalities' input for the threshold, but believe the 1 billion threshold is far too high. While we understand the desire to avoid burdening the project during the early operations and essentially taxing in-state gas, the difference in the thresholds are a real fiscal implication for our local government. We also recognize that the project construction will impact different communities differently. The preferred approach is the ability to negotiate a construction phase PIL tailored to each municipality's expected impacts. In closing, the Mat-Su Borough supports the overall structure of Senate Bill 280 and supports advancing the AK LNG project. We especially ask the committee to recognize the importance of flexibility in the PIL negotiation. Consider a lower PIL threshold and acknowledge the need for construction phase impact. Thank you again for your time, and thank you for inviting me to participate. Are there questions, ma'am?
Thank you, Mayor DeVries. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony. Has the Mat-Su Borough done any estimates about how much it would receive if this bill did not pass and the pipeline were to proceed versus how much it would receive if this bill were to pass?
I'm sure that our administration has done that. I don't have the figures here now. I can provide those to the committee.
Thank you, Mayor. Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what I know Mat-Su Borough has other taxes in effect. Like a bed tax, business inventory tax, other taxes like that. And do you know if those taxes would be impacted by the passage of this bill?
We do have a bed tax. We have a marijuana tax. And we have some miscellaneous fees that what was the last part of your question, please?
I'm just curious if you were aware whether or not this bill would impact those taxes, and if so, how much?
Not that we are aware of will appeal affected those taxes.
Thank you. Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor DeVries, I appreciate you being online and talking to us a little bit. What would a construction phase PIL look like to you, and how would it be sort of made fair, I guess, in your borough?
Well, our assembly has decided after looking at, you know, all of the possibilities and implementation, I think that with the PIL, we anticipate that we would get away from having the back and forth on trying to evaluate the pipeline, and it would be more of a figure that we could depend upon more easily than every year having to evaluate and share also with the state for the property tax. So that's the basis for our going with the PIL rather than the property tax.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki.
Just more something of a statement, but I know that, you know, North Dakota was one of those places without a lot of amenities when, you know, suddenly the Bakken Shale happened and a lot of folks went there. So overwhelming schools, overwhelming roads, overwhelming sort of the healthcare system that was in place. Do you anticipate something of that to happen in the Mat-Su Borough, since it's sort of the it's pretty close to where the LNG will be?
Madam Chair, if I could address his question. So the borough has 22% of the pipeline in its borough, but it only affects one road service area that we have because it's on the other side of the river. And so trying to get, so say like if they had some questions regarding EMS, trying to get there to them would not be something that we could do. So, but we also, I hopefully think, are wise enough to realize that the borough still is a very desirable place to live, And so we would anticipate that there would be more demand upon our housing and, of course, then upon the schools and upon our transportation. But as far as the pipeline and the camps, they're not going to be in the core area that I explained to you, sir.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Other questions? Yeah. Other questions for Mayor DeVries? I don't see any. Thank you very much, Mayor DeVries, for joining us today. With that, I'm going to go to Mayor Josiah Pocketuck, former representative from the North Slope Borough and now mayor. Welcome, Mayor Pocketuck.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Senators and members of the Resources Committee, and thank you for taking the opportunity. Just to verify, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you very much. Firstly, you know, I want to start with our longstanding and generous support of balanced resource development in the North Shore Borough. Actually, I was thinking as we were going through introductions over the last 5 minutes or so, the last time I probably presented before this committee was probably in support of and carrying the resolutions for ANWR and NPRA during my time in the House. And that commitment to supporting balanced resource development doesn't waver, and it's actually something that we see as a responsibility here on the North Slope, understanding that the state's needs and the nation's needs need to be met. And there's no, I guess, more interesting time in global happenings that underlines the importance of domestic production of oil and gas and a project like HLNG, and we're supportive generally of trying to make HLNG happen. It's important for me to share as a spokesperson of the residents of the North Shore Borough. Currently, without this legislation, the only thing that the North Shore Borough stands to gain from this is property taxes. There's no contemplation for spur lines or gas being fed to any of our communities. And that's something that is very apparent to the residents of the North Shore Borough, but also to my assembly members. And when we talk about proposing any kind of holidays or PILTs or abatements of property taxes, I think it's important from the North Slope's perspective, at least, considering that you have quite a bit of 1456 tax of the property, along with 2945 tax of the property, that you consider what's being asked, what value is being asked to be holidayed or abated. And the value would be tied on the investment of capital. And I think that's one of the things that we're struggling with is trying to assess the actual value of the project to know what value we're potentially trading away for something else. And so that's something else from the North Slope's perspective. You know, we're so supportive of something like this. We'd actually like to be co-owners of the project. If there's a way that we could structure a holiday on property taxes along with true CapEx being put up to secure some kind of equity in the project, that's something that we'd love to pursue. But again, it relies upon understanding the values of what we're asking to trade as far as giving up a large percentage of 1456 property taxes in lieu of getting some sort of equity and making sure those amounts par with each other, along with cash that could be contributed to the project. I think there's a better conversation to be had probably in a follow-up with AGDC or Glen Farm in regards to the differences in values of the gas treatment plant versus the pipeline, and if any thought has been put into treating those things separately as far as holidays and abatements. Considering that a majority of our North Slope communities power generating heat off of diesel, I understand the cost of utilities across the state. And if there are other ways that we can maintain the low cost of utilities for in-state gas use, I would love to explore those opportunities. Just just a few days ago, I was actually remembering my time in House Resources when we spent some time learning about the royalty in kind deal that we make with the refineries that use DOT fuel in Fairbanks. And is there a model like that that could be applied to in-state users or public utilities in the state? Those are the kind of things that I would love to contribute by way of waiving property taxes to maintain low gas rates for in-state users. But aside from all those details, I think it's important to look at what's being asked in this bill from a government perspective, but also from a private sector investment perspective, specifically with 4356 property tax assessments. And the precedent that I'm concerned about with the North Slope Borough and the state of Alaska, because we've spent a lot of time and money and many hours with lawyers defending assessments that the Department of Revenue has put together, is what kind of precedent does it set for projects that want to proceed to FID? I guess I'm worried, does this become the normal process before getting the FID on a major oil and gas project on the North Slope, is that, you know, we try to see if we can waive property taxes before we get to that FID. I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about the sentiment that it sends to the rest of the 4356 taxpayers in the North Slope. We have a major investment that has occurred over the last few years and is on our horizon with our record-breaking lease sale of NPRA, and maintaining that fair treatment of the oil and gas 4356 properties across the board. You know, I can't speak on behalf of the oil companies that are currently operating on the North Slope, but if I was a private sector oil company, I definitely would be watching what's happening with this proposed legislation and getting my proposed legislation ready to reduce the mill rate for making my project more economical. So I'm worried about that precedent, and is there a way we could craft this that reduces the capex costs, property tax costs, and the building stage of this project, delay it until another time? I think there is. I think this is part of it, but that requires transparency of the figures and transparency of the numbers between parties to make sure, again, going back to my first point, we understand what we're trading away. The second point is the regime that this is approaching the tax in general is on a throughput model. And for those sitting on the committee, I'm sure you're aware, as we operated the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, we've levied property taxes. And when I say we, I mean the Department of Revenue, along with the state of Alaska, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and Valdez, have defended valuations based on replacement cost, new versus throughput. And is then the expectation once we determine the AKLNG line to be based on throughput that we would then come right behind to put the same tax regime on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline? I wonder if that is something that folks are thinking of, because we've seen over the years appeals to reduce the valuation of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline based on declining throughput. And I would think that those two things, those two commodities, whether it's the Trans-Alaska Pipeline or the AKLNG, would be treated similarly. So I wonder if there's any foresight to that. And I think the Denali mayor spoke a little bit to it and stated very divided as far as, you know, as the mayor, I am the representative of the day-to-day operations, but when it comes to matters like this, I have an assembly that is a fiduciary to these things, and I would ask that if any kind of broad authority is given to AGDC or the state without details of the concessions in place for the different mayors, that there's some type of on the assembly's final approvals of the different things that are at hand. Understanding that, this is under a big time crunch by the producer before SID and before the end of session. And the last thing I would ask is, has the committee committed to any type of schedule as far as moving the substation through the process? That'd be good for us to understand. And with that, I can plan to follow up with any other written testimony. And I want to make sure we leave time for the remaining colleagues that I have online. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mayor Pakatuk, for your comments. Are there questions for Mayor Pakatuk? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Mayor Pakatuk, good to hear from you again. Just a couple quick questions. I'm wondering if you have a rough estimate of how much tax you would be getting from the project in the under the current regime, if this legislation doesn't pass, and then roughly what the North Slope Borough budget is these days.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Myers, for the inquiry. I'd have to follow up with exact numbers on the proposed revenue for the North Slope Borough under the current tax regime, but I do know that it is pretty substantial considering the gas treatment plant on slope. And that being a majority of the investment, I think that's part of the question that I have is what is the tax revenue on a $40 billion project versus a $80 billion project or whatever the final number would be. That's one of the things that I'd like to learn more. But as it stands now, at a $44 billion CapEx, the North Slope Borough stands to lose $12 billion, roughly, over the course of the 30 years.
Follow-up, Senator Myers?
Thank you, Mayor. And then just roughly, what's the North Slope Borough budget these days?
Sure. I'll have to follow up with exact details on it, but it is in the $400 million operating budget area, considering that we run all water and sewer, we build all of our schools, we fund our education above the state funding amount. We maintain majority of our airports on slope. We do our own search and rescue. We do our own fire and police. And we actually subsidize the district attorney's office in the area of court. So it's quite the responsibility as far as providing social services, municipal services, that no other municipality in the state has the full responsibility of. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Follow-up, further questions for Mayor Pakatuk? Seeing none, Mayor Pakatuk, thank you very much for joining us.
Madam Chair, Senator Clayman, I've got a question.
All right. Thank you, Senator Clayman.
Mayor Pakatuk, in the information that you're getting in response to Senator Myers' questions, if you could not just give us the operating budget amount for the North Slope Borough, but actually the revenue figure, because my impression is that your revenue may exceed your budget. And in addition, if you could give the estimated, if there's no change, what the estimated tax would come if the project was built, at least based on the estimates you have for the value of the project. And then the third part, which you may know today, is of the amount that some of which may go to the state and some which goes to the borough, how is that split today on the 20 mills that can be assessed as property tax? How much does the borough keep and how much goes to the state?
Thank you for the question. Can you hear me? I got a notification that I was muted.
I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. I'll go with the last one first, and I might have to ask for a reminder of the first one, Senator Clayman. Thank you for the question. Currently, the North Slope Borough levies 17.99 mils, as sustained in the 18 mil threshold. That would produce the tax cap formula versus O&M and budget. And so we leave 2.01 mils on the table that the state realizes in property tax revenue. And the difference between revenues versus operating budget, the delta, for the most part, is at $550 million with the delta going to debt service. Again, as I mentioned, we build all of our infrastructure on the North Slope for municipal services, and we do that with general obligation bonds that we put out over a number of years and have to pay the debt on. So that's where the remaining revenue goes for all the major infrastructure that you guys are familiar with through the CAPSIS system. We handle all of that in Slope under our own finances. And so there was a third question there that I lost there. Somebody please, if you could remind me.
Madam Chair, I think I wanted to see the last piece was how much you would expect to see in revenue should the pipeline get built, and there's no changes proposed in Senate Bill 280.
Thank you. At the information that's been shared with us thus far, with the CapEx spend around $44 to $50 billion, I know I saw a couple of spreadsheets that had two different cost of builds. It's roughly $12 billion over the course of 30 years, and I guess that's the crux of my questions and learning more about the project and the capital stack of the project and the project financing. Should we be negotiating mills and percentages based on $44 billion, based on $50 billion, based on a number greater? I think that's an important piece of information. We can talk about the mills and percentages, but there are variables that are plugged into that would drastically change what we're being asked to abate or give holiday to. So,
thank you.
Thank you, Senator Clayman. I see no other questions. Mayor Pakatuk, thank you again for joining us today. Next up, we will invite Mayor Greyer Hopkins, former representative from Fairbanks and now mayor of the Fairbanks North Style Borough. Welcome, Mayor Hopkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair Diesel. I appreciate it. Thank you, members of the committee, for bringing us in today. We've been having decent conversations this throughput model, which has become Senate Bill 280, since about the beginning of late January, the end of January, with AGDC and some other members of the governor's team, as well as Glenn Parn attending sometimes and some consultants. They've been decent conversations, but at this point, one thing you've heard from us consistently so far is we don't support this bill yet. It's not where we as mayors feel it needs to be to support our communities, to support the impacts that we're going to see, or provide us with the benefits, either economically or tax-wise, that can set our communities up for a long time. And we've been doing a fantastic job of working together and moving forward with a unified voice. One thing you've heard, and something of a theme, with one more mayor to talk, is we all have very different needs. We all have very different impacts that we see from this project and from this bill as well. But we're not there yet. We have more meetings set up weekly, but of course now working with the legislature can move things along at a different pace, so that we're looking forward to working with all of you as well at AGDC in this process. You know, a wise man once said, and he's sitting in the room there, that, you know, we will not be bullied and we will not be rushed. I will go ahead and say we are not being bullied at this time. It does not feel like that yet with us at all. But it has been a rushed process. You know, this is a big discussion, and it's something that just started in January. The governor came to us in October to say he'd like to bring us all together, and he managed to start doing that in January. But it's difficult when each of us have vastly different needs and limited time and certainly limited resources at our municipal levels. The gas line, this line is about 12 years ago, was routed outside almost completely of the Fairbank North Star borough. So today we only have 2 miles of line that goes through our boundaries. And that line is about 30 miles away from our current natural gas infrastructure. At really back of the napkin math and some Googles, we found that you were about $10 million a mile for this line, and that was an estimate from 10, 12 years ago. And so with that math, that was at 20 mil, that would be about $400,000 worth of revenue, but our borough only taxes at about 10 mils worth of revenue. So we'd be looking at about $200,000 worth of revenue at our current tax rate if we're still running at about $10 million a line. Of course, looking at inflation based on that, that's a little bit more this time, but we don't have those certain numbers. So that's just my back of the napkin math. And it's much easier math than many of the other municipalities because we only have 2 miles and far fewer moving parts than the beginning and the terminus of the line. So if you look at that $400,000 and reduce that by about 90%, we'd be getting less than $100,000, around $50,000 or so in the end of revenue under this legislation. So the revenue for us is not what we're really impacted by. It is the economics of the project and how it does not at this time support an economic boom to our community here in the interior. Not one molecule of this gas line is set to go to this community and the interior gas utility ratepayers or anybody who could be planning on switching to natural gas in our community, whether it's an anchor tenant, whether it's a new military base, or our GVEA infrastructure. We don't get any of this gas because we are currently trucking Northscope gas down to our community. And unless that price of gas comes to us at a certain break-even point that would allow our interior gas utility to get out of their contract with Harvest and Hillcorp, because it would help both sides of that ledger, we're not going to see impacts without a spur line being built. So one of the things I've been talking about consistently in my community has for far longer than I've been mayor and far longer than I was even a representative is the need for that spur line here. In order for this state to see the boon and economic boost from this project, we have to make sure we're getting Alaskan gas to Alaskans. And that spur line, 10 years ago, last time it was estimated out there, was about $180 million for those 30 miles. And it was prices certainly going to have gone up since then. And if you put that on the backs of the 30,500 or so ratepayers currently in today's dollars, we're not expecting to see price come in any cheaper for an MCF of gas than we're dealing with today. And that's in the $25-$26 per MCF range that we're seeing today. And if we can't get that price down and not have the spur line on the backs of those ratepayers, it's going to be it's not going to deliver an acceptable gas to our community. And so we're going to continue to have air quality issues. We're going to continue to have our economy stymied. And so that spur line is what it comes down to us for needs. And you heard Mayor Pocketock talk about, and accurately so, his community, his borough doesn't get gas through this project. It gets revenue. And our community doesn't get revenue, and it doesn't get gas. So, you know, that's why the needs are so diverse. For all of our different communities. I will say, in full clarity, the conversations around that spur line need have, I believe, started to sink in. I had conversations this morning with a Glen Farm representative about the need for the spur line and their understanding for it. There's no concrete plans yet to see that built, how it would be built, how it would be financed, or what timeline. But the conversations are ongoing, and I appreciate that understanding. I also talked to the governor several days ago, I believe it was Monday, about the same need to express where our start and stop is for the support of this project. Those are good, and I'm happy to see it. You know, I'm not looking at trying to make a ton of money for this community, and every single one of us has said we're not looking at getting rich off of this line. We're looking at getting what's fair, maintaining our autonomy and our ability to negotiate or get a fair deal and make sure that the project benefits our community, not just financially for many of us, but economically and the needs across the board. So We've been working together. We've been standing together as municipal mayors and leaders for our communities. We're looking to have our costs covered. So what does that look like for construction tilt is also something that's interesting, important. That's fire and EMS service for us in our fire service areas, ensuring that those costs are covered. Depending on where the bed down pipe yards are, where the offload yards are, getting off of the railroad here in the interior, the location of those railroad yards, how our municipal solid waste is impacted, are all prices and issues that we need to make sure are covered. And we're trying to get a handle on that. But as I said earlier, we don't know yet what Glen Farm's impacts and plans are going to be on our community. We're getting a feel for that. They shared maps of where those camps will be, where the roads are going to be, but not numbers and not full scale. So we're still working that out. They did share some other numbers of how many people, how many trucks, how many miles of pipe would go through our community on the backs of trucks to get to the construction areas. So those conversations are ongoing, but we don't know that yet. And that's why the timeline is important for all of you to take in consideration if you run into your end of session timeline. And understanding that, you know, that's the timeline that Glen Farms put forward for needing to see what their costs are going to be. But you have to do your due diligence, and we do as well. So what are going to be those impacts to the state, as Mayor Prokhorov was talking about? What are going to be the impacts to the municipalities and the people and the businesses of this state? Are all the things that we have to take into account, and so do you. So we're standing strong together. We're having good conversations, but there's still a long way to go, in all honesty. And we are protecting our autonomy and our taxing authority and negotiating authority as our paramount need. The project – phase one versus phase two is something that's very important to take into consideration. Phase one, you know, is a line that the length of the line changed recently, actually, a few weeks ago. Mayor Michicki can go into it in further detail, but he noticed in an email that the line now ends in Big Lake. And so it's a shorter line than what was initially proposed even several weeks ago in that phase. And so it doesn't go into the Kenai Peninsula. It's shorter into the Mat-Su. Still has the same distance in Denali, North Slope, and Fairbanks. But the state also still receives the largest portion of that line in revenue for this. The 304 miles of this line that go through the unincorporated borough, which is nearly 40, which is about 40% of that, the overall line, all that revenue would be going to the state there. So that's the largest chunk of the gas line itself, including the infrastructure at the beginning of the pipe for within the North Slopes boundaries. That's the biggest chunk of the revenue would be going there to that line. So the change in projects, the ongoing conversations, and working with the legislature are things we're looking forward to. So I'm happy to answer any questions on that. But like I said before I close and pass it back, how we get the economic benefit to all the different Alaskans who get access to this gas is what's absolutely paramount and why we're advocating day in and day out for that spur line that's included in the tariff for the entire project, because if we're going to get Alaskan gas to Alaskans, we have to make sure it benefits everybody along that line in the ways that they need. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mayor Hopkins, for that that testimony. Questions, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mayor Hopkins, as you mentioned, you know, Fairbanks is a little bit left out in the cold when it comes to the property tax issue, because we only got 2 miles anyway, but obviously we're going to be a major hub for construction and transportation. So the spur line aside, that's a whole nother issue of its own. absent the bill, kind of what are the plans as far as revenue and dealing with offsetting expenditures? And then does the bill right now alter any of those plans potentially?
As of right now, not the biggest impact that we want to see is one thing that to change. An important part of the bill that Mayor DeVries highlighted was the making sure that the value of the line does not go to the value of our overall assessed value for school funding. As many of you know, and our overall assessed value of your municipality grows, which it generally does every year, then the state reduces its payments to the school districts. So if We're not receiving revenue, but the value of the line is included in our overall assessed value. It's a double negative, and the triple if you count the reduction in state costs to our state support charter school districts. So that's something that's important to maintain and see. You know, right now the bill does not have anything for construction tilts in here, and making sure we're covering our fire and EMS is important. It depends. The biggest impact on that construction and what the services are is going to be where they put the construction infrastructure. I've had some preliminary conversations with Glenn Farn about where those lay down yards are, especially as they come off of the railroad, because like you said, Senator, correctly, we are going to be a hub for construction. We're the end of the railroad, and if they're they're railroading the pipe up to Fairbanks, we're going to make sure it's done in the right place. And right now, their plan for the offload yard is stopping on the railroad on Murphy Dome Road, and then offloading 75, plus feet long pieces of pipe onto roads, and then going down Goldstream Road out to the Dalton Highway and Elliott and Keith Highways, or going down Sheep Creek Road out to the parks to get it south. Both of those roads are inundated with permafrost. They have tight turns. They're blind turns. They have no lights, street lights on them, because we love our dark skies here in the interior. I've had preliminary conversations with Glen Farm, but want to continue then about where that pipe yard would be to move it still along the railroad out between the two ends of Badger Road along the Richardson Highway, so that they would be on the highways. They would mirror the route already being taken by the Manitoba Trucking Project and ensure that they're on much safer highways and much lower impact on the road maintenance and on the people and neighborhoods of those roads.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, for being online and talking to us about Fairbanks. I think I agree with you. Fairbanks is the center of the landscape. You've got the terminus of the railroad, you've got the Alcan moving from the east, and then you've got the Richardson Highway corridor. So it's the right place to, I think, start the project. Of course it'll go north and south. But have you thought, because I think when we were talking about AGIA, which was two decades ago now, and between that time and AGDC, the things that happened in North Dakota are sort of telling. Mm-hmm. How much have you thought about, like, the property taxes, rentals would rise, places just for regular people to live, I think, would be really tough. And then, of course, we've talked about the burden of workforce. Have you worked on that as a sort of a Fairbanks area mayor?
Yeah, and you hit it on the head there at the end. It's the Fairbanks area mayor. North Pole and the Badger area have access to natural gas. This is going to be a community-wide project. And so we have thought a fair bit about housing. When I met with the Glen Farm representatives who came here to town, I asked about housing, and that was something that was brought up earlier in terms of weeks and months ago in terms of maybe there's an equity plan we could have. But unfortunately, that's sort of off the table as they're not going to be building permanent housing. They're going to be using mobile man camps and moving them along the route as construction moves up and down the 1,000 miles. So we're not going to be getting much from housing, but workforce development is going to be really important. And something I forgot to write down on my initial stage is we have, many of you have heard of our world famous Tiger Team meetings. Those Tiger Teams are how we have incorporated conversations with the military community here. We have pivoted that Tiger Team to be talking about prepping our community for the gas line. We had our first meeting at the first Friday of March, and we're having our second meeting on the first Friday of April. And so we're talking about what those impacts are and bringing in our labor organizations and then a number of other stakeholders to talk about issues just like the workforce development. Is something we're trying to get our hands around. I don't honestly know how many new students are going to come to the Fairbanks North Star Borough with the man camps not being concrete here and moving up and down the line. Hopefully we can be an attractive place and people want to stay here and move here, and we'll bring more families. But until that time, we're not going to be getting a huge impact in our community from the on schools.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Dunbar.
Not a question, Madam Chair, just sort of a comment. I understand what Mayor Hopkins is saying about the man camps and the short-term construction. I do think for all the mayors, I expect there will be impacts on housing from the project, including people working at the different plants that will work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off on the slope and want to maybe not fly to Oregon, but instead live in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I'll just note, we have a bill that passed the State House, my bill, that is currently in Senate Finance to allow ADA to do low interest bonding and loans for housing construction projects for the workforce. And I think AKLNG is a massive, massive project. And it's very hard to anticipate. You can hear all the mayors say this. It's very hard to anticipate exactly how those projects will, those impacts will play out and where those housing needs will go. But they will exist beyond just the man camps. And so I hope that we are constructing housing concomitant with this project going forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Senator Klayman, do you have any questions for Mayor Hopkins?
No.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Hopkins. I don't see any further questions. Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate your emphasis on the fact that discussions are still continuing and you are engaging with Glenn Farn, giving them the reality of the situation in Fairbanks and the needs of that community. Lastly, we will be speaking with former Senator Peter Michicki, who is now the mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Mayor Michicki, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on tonight. We really appreciate your interest. I came to the quietest place in the house and a boat just started behind me. We're at Grandma's, so I appreciate, or I would like to know if the sound is okay at this point.
The sound is great. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Yes, thank you. As you all know, I have a lot of history in the industry. And been on every side of these tables. Negotiated several large LNG projects, three states, two continents, three continents, including the US. I've been very involved with AKLNG for a very long time. I've met with every delegation that came to the state. We are very supportive of the project, and we hope to see something go forward. I feel it is very forward. I put my hand on several Bibles, one in municipal government before I came down to work with all of you, one down there where we were very focused on the people of Alaska, and now I'm back home. And my focus now is to make sure that retirees and working families on the Kenai Peninsula Borough are not subsidizing a very, very large project. This bill told us there. I'm very worried about that. I am not rubbing my hands together as the borough mayor down here. The fact is we have the lowest mill rate of any 4356 region. This project's going to have a mill rate of around 7 here. Most of the facilities in our area are the Title 29 4550 properties. We work with them very well. So I'm very worried as shifts of costs, as costs have shifted from the state to municipalities. We're kind of making it the way it is, but we simply can't afford additional costs. In running the worksheets that came from the project, this is the home of the liquefaction facility. It's 43.5% of the value of the project. This will be a busy place with thousands of people working here for 3 to 4 years. It's tens of millions of dollars of impact a year for us. And I can talk about where that impact lies. But first, I want to talk about the fact that this is a very compressed schedule. And I'd rather be coming to you with support for a bill that we had negotiated over time, which would have been particularly easy for 43.5% of the value of this project, because that's kind of what we do. We have large industrial facilities and have since about 68. When they're operating and doing well, we have the full mill rate. And under our ability to negotiate under Title 29, 29, 45, 50, And now, if you remember, we passed M, which is the economic development piece that gives us more flexibility. I just wish the project would have come and said, hey, Peter, for the last three renditions of this project, we know we have a property tax issue and we'd like to sit down and talk to you about it. I'm disappointed to see Title 29 in this bill. We just recently have been leaning on the state for 2.5 years to reduce the taxable value in a 4356 property because we're more interested in the gas than the taxes. We really want to support lower cost people of South Central, and that's where we are in this project. So the ability to negotiate on this would bring a satisfactory, I'm convinced, a satisfactory result to the project. So I would like to see similar options under 4356, and I would like to honor the local needs of each community. They're all very different. In my case, well, let's talk about the other cases. For 800 miles of pipeline, those of you with natural gas pipeline experience know that once it becomes covered in subsurface, you'll see a truck with a logo patrolling the pipeline periodically and working on some instrumentation and doing their rounds. This is going to change our community for 30 years. Lots of impacts. I'm one of those impacts. I came for the summer as an intern for Marathon, which was Tesoro at the time, and I've built my life there. Here, I hope a lot of people do. We've had 14 years of out-migration. That's painful. We do need the commerce, but this bill needs a lot of work. And I can talk about a few of those things if you'd like. We've got five boroughs and the unorganized borough, which is you, the state. I'm worried about the precedent going forward that if this project goes through and there's affordable natural gas, that additional projects could come forward, that the new floor is 10% of what the original mill rate is without the consideration for those local impacts. I'm very worried about that. Doesn't mean I'm not willing to negotiate it. In a little bit, I'll tell you what the value would have been, and the fact that we don't need that value to be satisfied here and have our costs covered. But that is something scary. That will be the new floor. Make no mistake, this is the 2 mil bill. It's converted into 6 cents per million standard cubic feet, but it is the 2 mil bill. It's a 90% reduction in revenue. That's okay. That's a starting point. I'd rather it wasn't, and that we've been busy for the last 6 months delivering a bill that we can wrap our arms around. But I have questions. I would like to be convinced of the affordability in that exchange of a 90% reduction in property tax for affordable gas for Alaskans. That gets me pretty excited if that's the case. So I have questions, but my primary concern here is covering costs in my community. My community is stretched, as all of yours are. Education funding, shifting costs. There are a lot of things that originally were designed to be reimbursed by the state that aren't any longer. School bond debt reimbursement, yada, yada, yada. I'm not gonna go on and on. We're making it. We're doing fine. But we can't afford additional costs. So wanna make sure my community's protected as well as the communities of my other partner mayors in this discussion. Curious what the state's gonna do with their share. What does that look like? So it's early in the process. Alaska needs commerce that's good for Alaska, right? And that question we heard earlier, that a little of something is better than nothing, in my case, below zero is not better than nothing. So I'm very concerned about that. And that's a strange statement to make, because we have to have that. That proves that that discussion must take place. They must understand the impacts on our communities and work for this. We are working together now. We just started a couple weeks ago with some fruitful progress, and I appreciate that. I've had a lot of calls with developers and AGDC and governor's office, and I think we are talking now. I think we might get there, but it's going to take some time. And I just can't stress more, the muni should remain in control of those pieces to make sure that their costs are covered. Because 30 years, I'll go through a few things in the bill. I just really want to stress that we take the time to get this right. It is a 30-year, your children and grandchildren impact. And it's imperative that we take the time to get it right. I think this is a bottom offer. A few concerns, the major components cannot cover import terminals until they become a part of the larger project. Why? Because we have three import terminals being proposed, and as a legislature, we try not to pick winners and losers, right? So that's something for you to consider. The excluded taxes may include everything. So anything possible, including providers of materials and items for the projects, may not be taxable. That needs to be clarified for me, and it's a change we can suggest. I don't know where 1 billion cubic feet comes from, but it's 5 times the current usage in state. I'm not sure why there's a floor. I'm not sure why there's 1% escalation. I will tell you that, and again, I respect the bottom offer thing. That's kind of how things start, right? It's been an awkward process, but it's moving along better. But I will tell you, I manage a budget with a 2.5% escalation. That requires discipline every day, every line of spend, every category of spend, every department to maintain 2.5%. So at 1% over 10 years, you're underwater, right? Everyone, all of you are used to dealing with these issues. Want to make sure that the taxes are levied and paid to the municipalities, not subject to appropriation. I'm okay with an alternate allocation of alternate tax. It was actually my idea. So let's do a throughput thing. But in the throughput calculation, it shifted the allocation for the people that will be living with this plan for a generation and a half from 43.5% to 21%. Detail I don't need to get into. We're talking about that. But I'm just actually demonstrating how early in the process we are and that we have a lot of work to do. So my impacts will be significant. I'd like for things, there may be pieces that can move forward, but I really hope that you will work with us and make sure we get this right to make sure that these municipalities and your needs are met collectively before we call this a ready for prime time piece of legislation. And I can list some of the, we're willing and have been partners for years. Again, on the taxation under Title 29, these plants are still here because we've reduced the taxable burden significantly. Why? We want them to come back to life, right? If the tax burden is too high, those facilities are going to go away. The Kenai LNG facility wouldn't be considered for a regas facility. Agrium wouldn't be there for a possible ammonia plant and some hydrogen work. So we want them to stay. We understand this. We've been in this business for 70 years, and we will continue working well with investors in our community. So our impacts, our housing impacts are going to be significant. We don't want man camps. We'd like to be partners. So when the earlier plants were constructed, the refinery and the LNG plant, the Agrium plant, the community built subdivisions in partnership with those developers. So there was quality neighborhoods that is a much better experience for everyone. It makes the road and traffic impacts easier to manage. We have to build bypass roads and have our schools ready. That's kind of what we do here. We'll take care of it, but it costs something. Nothing's free. We want to make sure that our costs are covered. So a little thumbnail sketch here. Again, we're the lowest mill rate of a 43.56. seven mills in the area of the facility, somewhere between $140 and $210 million would have been the likely property tax. We're okay to negotiate that down significantly, but 10% of it doesn't cover our costs. So we've got a lot of work to do. This isn't, I don't mean to sound negative because I'm excited. Pipe's gonna come into Seward for the pipeline, see some railroad traffic. Definitely liquefaction's going to be a huge project which will transform this community for 3 to 4 years. By working together, that could be a smooth transition into what we experienced in the past, as we've done in the past. And we're ready to sit down and pin a deal that works for everyone, the developers, our community, Alaskans. And I hope to God that comes along with affordable gas. And we'll be learning about that, I'm sure, in the very near future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mayor Michiki. Questions for Mayor Michiki? Yes, Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor Michiki. Appreciate your testimony. Good to see you. You said one thing which really struck me, and from Anchorage's perspective, we didn't have a mayor testify, and I've reached out to our mayor to get their input, and I know they're having their legal analyze it. But there's one section, and it's in version N, and it says a city may not levy or collect a sales or use tax on the purchase, use, consumption, or ownership of property or services relating to qualified property. And I don't know how you read that, and I'm looking into it some more, but I'm curious if you have concerns about that impacting potentially bed taxes, business personal property taxes, maybe gas taxes, rental vehicle taxes, if you have any thoughts on that.
One of my most enjoyable experiences in the legislature was arguing with Senator Wilikowski, and I appreciate seeing you as well. But that's how I read that. How does a community survive on those impacts when it cuts that deep into the fabric of our society? It's a very different philosophy from what I'm used to. Everywhere I've sat on this table, and it's something else we need to discuss. It's problematic. Where does that end? Contractors' lunches, bed taxes. I mean, we will be severely impacted, and the reduction of 90% does not align with the impact on the community. And that's what the discussion is about. I have faith we can get there. I think they were worried about timing. Not sure the timing issue. I will say that we've been at the table whenever asked. I've missed one meeting, had lots of side conversations with individuals associated with this. We need to sit down in one place and talk about this realistically. Not on the format of the meetings we've had were not effective until a couple of weeks ago. I think we're getting somewhere now. But I have to understand, why is this a first that I've seen in any project structure? I understand the negotiations for property tax because we do it today. And we'll continue to do it with similar projects. But this is cutting deep into the fabric of how our communities work. And that worries me. And I feel like I'm not negotiating online. I'm not negotiating through the legislature. We will be negotiating on our own. But those are the kinds of conversations that need to occur. If you take this as a state and say, we're going to figure this out for you, here's the bill, going to be a lot of pieces left that are going to be impossible for us to pick up.
Thank you. Further questions for Mayor Michiki? All right, seeing none, thank you very much, Mayor Michiki. I appreciate your comments. I appreciate your positive outlook that continued conversations are important and that we will get there. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right. With that, it concludes the mayor's testimony. It And I see no questions from Senator Klayman at this time. It did extend longer than I anticipated. Mr. Stickle is here, was going to begin going through the official note. I apologize, Mr. Stickle. We're going to set that aside. And we do have you and Glenn Farnup on Monday before this committee. So I apologize. You've sat here this whole time, but thank you. We do have a committee substitute to put on the table. Now, the committee substitute is a drafted version of the governor's bill by our legislative drafting. So we have a different drafting format than the Department of Law has. And so that's what this this committee substitute is. Senator Wilikowski.
Madam Chair, I move the committee adopt the Senate Resources CS for Senate Bill 280. Work order 34/GS2038/N as a North Pole as our working document.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. My staff, Paige Brown, will speak to the changes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Paige Brown, staff to Senator Giesel. There are no substantive changes in version N. Members also received a copy of the accompanying memo from Legislative Legal that includes other questions, but this was a rewrite to legislative drafting procedural answers. Yes.
All right. So again, just legislative drafting style. The content is the same. There is a memo from the attorney who drafted it with some questions. So committee members have that. It is posted or will be posted on BASIS. So everyone can view it. So seeing no objections, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the committee substitute? All right, seeing none, committee substitute for 280 version N is now before our committee. We're going to set the bill aside. We will revisit it on Monday, and it will give Glenn Farn and, of course, Department of Revenue opportunity to look at it as well as our legal memo. We do want to briefly put on the table Senate Bill 269. This relates to the Board of Fisheries. This will be the first hearing of the bill, and I'm going to invite Tim Grusendoff to come forward and present the bill to us online. Related to this bill, we have, no, actually not online, he's actually here in the room, is Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang of the Department of Fish and Game. So, welcome, Mr. Grusendoff, if you would present the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Grusendoff. I am staff to Senator Hoffman. We appreciate the chairman hearing the bill today. I'll make it short because it sounds like we've all had a long week and a long day today. Senator Hoffman has been watching the Board of Fish for quite a while now, and we've just noticed that over time they have been getting they're solving more conflicts, they're dealing with more different diverse user groups, and they're having a tough time. It's turned their job into a full-time job. I don't think it always used to be that way, and now we have a 7-member board that when they sign on to be a board member, it pretty much takes every day and every hour of their life for their time that they serve. And I think board members get burned out. I think we've got issues with how their time. They burn a bunch of their time. They can't keep up with all the different regions of the state that they have to go to. And I think also some of the regional areas feel like they're getting left out of the process a little bit because the board doesn't travel to their region. They're on a cycle and they get to every region, you know, every couple of years, every 3 years. And sometimes big issues sometimes sit for a while. And in the fisheries business, sometimes that's kind of tough on some of the fishermen and some of the user groups there. So Senate Bill 269 is being offered to begin discussions to make ways to make the Board of Fish regionally focused to increase efficiency and to allow the board to better understand and interact with the diverse user groups. The concept behind 269 is to restructure the board from a single 7-member board to a 15-member board comprised of 3 regional boards. One would be the Southeast Alaska and Yakutat region. The second would be the Central Gulf, Prince William Sound, Kodiak, and Southern Alaska Peninsula. And the third is the Arctic, Western, Kuskokwim, Yukon. And these boards will can also meet when they have fisheries that cross. They can also meet jointly as two regions, or there will be times when they have statewide issues that the whole board will meet. And they also are required to meet with the Board of Game at some point, so they will meet as a full board. The second thing this bill does is we've all heard about the conflicting out of members, and it's kind of tough when you have the person that has the most knowledge in a region on a fishery. They're not even allowed to be involved in discussions, and then they don't get to vote. This bill is going to propose the idea of, much like the legislature does, when you folks are on the floor, you get up, you state your conflict, and if any member objects, you're required, you get to participate, and you're required to vote. I think if someone really had a serious conflict of interest, they could probably talk to their fellow board members and just say, you know, this is a big deal, and I really would like not to participate or vote, at least vote on the issue. I'll participate in the discussion, but, you know, I'd like to abstain from voting. And so that's the basics behind this bill. Just for a kind of a discussion purposes, I haven't heard. I know the board is overworked, and we'd sort of like to see input from not only industry, the people that go to the board of fish all the time. I attend the ones in Southeast. I commercial fish, and it's pretty tough. The board just recently had a hatchery meeting, and they had 5 days of hearings. I think 1,000 documents put before them, and 150 testifiers. And that's just for the hatchery issue. I mean, there are so many other issues that they deal with. I feel like these regional boards would be better for the users and for a better product coming from the Board of Fish to help maintain and the quality of our fisheries. So that's the basics of the bill. If you'd like me to take time to go through the sectional, I will, but it's up to you, Madam Chairman.
Committee members, are there any questions? Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Grishendorf, I really appreciate the introduction, kind of giving me the rationale for the bill. I'm curious, you're talking about the board members basically are overworked. This becomes a full-time job. They're not really compensated for it, things like that. Can completely understand why that's a problem. I'm curious if your office considered instead taking the Board of Fish and structuring it more like, say, the RCA, where it is a full-time job, you're paid for it, paid well, you'd be expected to remove yourself from, you know, any commercial interest that you have related to it, and so that would remove the conflict of interest problems if that was something that was brought up in the discussion.
Through the chair, Senator Myers. No, we didn't discuss that. This is just something that's been in the back of Senator Hoffman's head for quite a while. I started working on this probably 10, 15 years ago at one point when we had some issues with the board, and we put it aside, and this was just his idea on how to better structure the board. I know there's a lot of better ways to do it, possibly. This is just an idea that we put out there because we know it's something needs to be done because that board is really getting overworked.
Okay. Just to
Senator Myers.
Thank you. Just to follow on comment. Again, I appreciate the problem that we're trying to solve here. I'm just, if the problem is already that bad, the initial thing that goes through my head is splitting it up into regional boards. It kind of feels like a stopgap. You know, maybe this is going to work for 5 or 10 years, and then, well, now you got three boards with people bringing even more proposals because now you've got time for it, and we're going to be back in the same situation at some point in the future. So, just a thought moving forward. Thank you,
Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, thanks. This is a technical question on the regional board. So, would the regional board set the fish allocation? Would they be in charge of the allocation issue?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, yes, they would be seen as the Board of Fish for their region, so they will set allocations in their region. If there's cross fisheries, then the two regional boards will get together if they have issues like that. So that was the intent.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Sure, and I don't know this if there is a case where this would happen, but what happens if, like, the the fisheries that are located inside the interior would just seem like they have a veto power over the other five on the coastal side. And I don't know if that's there's a fishery that does that, actually. But would there be a time where that could potentially happen? And what happens in that case?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I don't know of a case where that could potentially happen, but I probably could. I would imagine it probably could. And if it's just the two boards get together and there's a proposal, and, of course, you have two five-member boards, so they're – you wouldn't have an odd number. It was our thought that if a proposal was offered and it turned out to be a tie, the motion would fail. Whatever they were doing, it would not pass. So they, and I think if it got to be of a super serious nature, that's probably something the full board could take up with all three boards sitting, because they're going to have to meet once or twice for sure. So that might have to go to them as an outside arbitrator, I guess.
Okay.
Looking in.
So, follow up.
Follow up.
Just it looks like so the Southeast and Yakutat might be close to the Prince William Sound, and so there might be impacts in one of those fisheries that would impact the other fishery. So they would both be involved, is what you're saying. Both regions would be involved in that discussion.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I would say yes, but the fisheries that are involved there, I'm involved in the Southeast quite a bit, and Yakutat's a troll. They don't seine out of Yakutat. They don't gillnet out of Yakutat. They all come down into Southeast proper. So the only, and there's some bottom fish out there probably off the coast, but I don't think they compete like that, like you would think.
Okay, and then.
There are other questions, but if you have another one to follow up.
One other one is like, so the Central Gulf, Prince William Sound fishery, would those people, they have to live in that region?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, yes. That would be the intent, that everyone, you would live or you would, work or reside or in that area. Okay. And these areas aren't necessarily set in stone. They're just kind of common lines that we've seen before in the past. I've had comments from folks from out of Homer that said they didn't really think that Kodiak, that area should be tied in with Prince William Sound because they have different types of fisheries. And so that'd be something that I think when they do their regulations with Department of Fish and Game, that's something they would figure out. And we're also not sold on the makeup of the individuals on the board. Right now we have a commercial fisherman, sport fish, and subsistence users. And then we have two other board members. And those board members, I think it would probably be smart to put someone that has a science background. Because right now that's not a requirement. But someone would suggest that, I think that would be a good idea.
Last question, Senator Kawasaki.
Just to get the point out, Central Gulf, Prince William Sound, so the folks that are there, the river goes all the way up north into the interior. And the fish... the people who fish that in Chitna, for instance, are Fairbanksons, right? So that would be a fishery where the board would represent not necessarily the people who actually fish in the area. Thanks.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to bring up that point is, who lives in the region? How far from a river do you have to be to live near it? Like 10 miles, 100 miles? It actually would make a huge difference. The other question I had is about I guess I don't actually know this for the existing Board of Fish. For this is all based on drainage. For those ponds and lakes that don't meaningfully drain into any of these areas that are stocked or that have kokanee or other kind of like inland fish, does the Board of Fish have jurisdiction over them now, or is that purely fish and game?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I don't know the answer to that. You'd probably have to ask fish and game. I don't recall seeing the Board of Fish deal with fish stocking necessarily, unless it's a hatchery and they release the fish out into the wild. But it
wouldn't matter for our current Board of Fish. If they had jurisdiction, they could do it anywhere. But it would matter for this, right? Because you'd have to, because it's based on drainage, you have to figure out where who owns those lakes and ponds. That's all, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Senator Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I was just wondering, I'm reading the fiscal note, And I also read section, four and paragraph, page three. So there's going to be some joint meetings. Does the fiscal note adequately cover the joint meetings? Because I don't think it's really clear when I read the analysis. I think it says that it doesn't understand whether there's going to be enough to make a... So could it be more than $1 million as it sits?
Through the chair, Senator Rouser, it could be. Our thought was that it might be a little more expensive to start up and get some of these things going, but we thought that as the board caught up on its business, they would probably could have less meetings than some of their regional ones, because they should be able to get caught up because they're focusing on that region and traveling around that region. So we assumed that we were hoping that they would be able to catch up and thus have less meetings and have less time to have to sit there and study up on, you know, potentially other regions of the state as it is now, where they can continually focus on their region specifically.
And
all right, Senator Rusher, one follow-up, and then we are going to adjourn.
I just want to know whether it includes the fish and game part, joint meetings, not just the fish. That's all I really want to know. And if you could find that out for me, I'd be happy.
That'd be great. Thank you very much, Senator Rusher. So with that, I will set this bill aside. Thank you, Mr. Grusendorf, for being present. Thank you to Commissioner Doug Vincent Lang for being present for questions. We will conclude the meeting at this time. Our next meeting will be Monday, March 30th, at the usual time, 3:30. And we will focus solely on Senate Bill 280 at that time, with Glenn Farn, AGDC, and the Department of Revenue present. At this time, the meeting will be adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 5:01 p.m.